Blog Talk Radio.
River Nile album available on Amazon. Nazim Rashid, very, very good friend of mine, my brother, whose show follows the student to teacher show this morning called Mentor Man on blogtalkradio.com. Hi, this is Professor Applewhite. Good morning to you. Wow, it's just wonderful to be alive this morning. I woke up this morning and just, you know, as I always suggest to my students, lay there just for a moment and think about what your day was like the day before and how things are going to change for the better today to prepare for an even better tomorrow. Make yourself, force yourself, if you have to smile. The energy of a smile causes all kinds of chemical reactions in your body before your feet even hit the floor. That's right. So I welcome you this morning to a whole new outlook, something that you can take with you and start practicing day in and day out. Wake up in the morning and bring a smile to your face before your feet hit the floor. What are you going to smile about, you might ask? Anything you can think of. And if you can't think of anything right off the top of your head, just make a smile. You'd be surprised. Even the movement in your facial muscles will cause a chemical reaction to It actually energizes you and activates certain hormonal levels in your body. And before you know it, you will have something beautiful to think about. It might be just that you woke up this morning. It might be that you look around your room and you thank God for all of the blessings that are in your life. If you're unemployed or underemployed, you might say, what blessings? Find them. They're there. If you're a veteran even with a disability or unemployed or just got back from Afghanistan or Iraq, and maybe things are broken in your life, find that window. There is a window of hope. Open it up and look. If you're a student who's angry about so many things in your life, try your best right now to just focus on something that makes you feel good. Sometimes what I do is I have, especially with employment situations, I have people go back and think about where they were the day before they started school, a class that they wanted to take, or before they started a new job. And if they go back to that moment, there's a sense of excitement. There's an adrenaline rush. You were excited about getting that job. You were happy to get that job. You were happy to enroll in that class. That's the excitement you want to try to keep in your life. We lose that excitement sometimes, and we become very depressed. Teachers, that happens to you a lot out there. The excitement that you felt when you first started on your teacher education journey. And that may have started when you were like my little niece, 4 or 5 years old, and saying, I want to be a teacher. And mom or somebody got you a chalkboard in your room. Or maybe you just had a notebook. And you started writing down things. I see, oh gosh, I see kids do this so much. And I can tell the young teachers, because they want to teach people. They want them to sit down and they want to emulate or copy what they see other people doing, mainly the teachers in their life. And they want to teach you their little bit of math that they know or their spelling, and they want to work with you. And you'll see this happening at an early age. And then they continue to keep growing and building on that excitement about teaching someone else, about sharing information. That's what a teacher is. Someone who shares information, shares resources, shares motivation, shares excitement about learning. Come on, teachers, you remember those times. I don't ever want you to forget it. My work, specifically as an educational psychologist and certified counselor, is dealing more with teacher education, faculty development. I like to excite teachers. Yes, I do. I like to make them feel good about what they're doing, and hopefully that excitement that I'm able to help them with will continue to trickle down into helping their students to feel better about learning, to feel excited. You know, it's that domino effect. Again, something begins to happen to some of us in the teaching profession that moves us from the excitement and minimizes our motivation and somehow creeps in and starts making us feel bad about going to work. Now, there are a number of things going on in education, but we all know that a reform is happening. Whether we like it or not, whether we say it is going to happen or not, it's happening, my friends. Education must be reformed. And I believe that a large portion of that begins with teachers. And so I ask you, teachers out there, all of you, one from one level of Sunday school teacher to the middle school teacher to the college professor, I ask you not to lose that sense of excitement. I ask you not to allow yourselves to fall into the negativity that surrounds those that do not believe in the future of education in this country, let alone the future of education in the world. Education in the sense of we all thrive to learn. It's within us. You cannot survive without the excitement of learning. As human beings, we just can't do it. It's not enough to just have our basic sustenance of food and shelter. It's not enough, even as Abraham Maslow brings out in his theory on hierarchy of needs. It's not enough to just have the basic needs and then the safety and a sense of belonging. Those are important. But we have to be able to feel that we're reaching our full potential, that we're striving for something, that we're climbing a mountain. And mountain climbers will tell you that once you climb one mountain, wow, you want to climb another one. You're like, next mountain, please. Next mountain, please. Next goal, please. Next class of students, please. Let's go, let's go, let's go. The excitement of walking into a classroom of new students in the beginning of the semester, starting anew again. All right, maybe you got a little depressed last semester. Maybe some things happened that caused some anxiety in your life. Maybe you drank a little bit too much. Maybe you got hooked on some prescription medication. Okay, maybe you're still there. There's a way out. I promise you. There's a way out. The chat line is open, by the way, for those of you who are willing to come on board and open up on Switchboard. You can come on the Switchboard and speak with me live, or you can go into the chat room and you can write a message to me, and I will go ahead and broadcast that without using your name, if you wish. And you can tell me what you think about this subject that we're addressing. We're going to be addressing it, as a matter of fact, for the next couple of weeks. And it has to do with teachers with mental illness, helping teachers with mental illness. So this is not like a knock against. I don't want anybody out there saying, oh, wow, let me listen to that show because, yeah, I know some crazy teachers. You may know some teachers who have some abnormalities in the way that they present themselves in the classroom. And in a minute, I'm going to share with you how we can distinguish between the abnormalities in behavior and determine whether or not that's truly what we determine as mental illness versus sometimes people just do crazy things. And guess what? You're a people. And you do crazy things, too. All of us do. But crazy is really not a psychological term. There is no crazy. We don't have symptoms. We don't have a diagnosis that says crazy. But we do have some very valid scientific results about what we call abnormal behavior. In other words, away from the norm of the society that you live in. Because we must keep in mind that the society that we live in actually dictates what is abnormal and what is normal. Whoa, you might say, hey, Apple, come back on that one. Wait a minute. What do you mean? That's right. You see, there are some societies where a person, I'll go to the extreme here, a person may hallucinate and hear voices and actually act out fantasies, talk to themselves, And within that particular society, tribe, village, culture, whatever, that is regarded as a priest. High, very high esteem. Whereas in many parts of America, that may be regarded as someone who needs to be institutionalized. I remember once the comparison that was brought out in one of my classrooms, and it was about the factor that there were people who actually, let's see, I think they had, they're from Africa. I think they're Thailand, and they're called giraffe women. And the reason why they're called giraffe women is because they put coils around their neck. At a young age, they start putting coils around their neck. And the coils, they weigh over 10 pounds, these coils. And what they do is they stretch the neck, and that's why we have that giraffe, that's why they call it a giraffe, giraffe women, giraffe neck women, or whatever, in Thailand. Now, I'm just using one country here. There's a lot. I can pull out cultural examples from every single country. But my point in this is that we consider the fact that these coils that weigh so much and they depress the neck area and they actually weaken the head and the neck. And the little girls, they start them at like 2-3 years old in putting these rings around their neck. And it's very, very troublesome. But it's part of the culture. So I remember when my students were addressing this, they were like, oh, wow, that's terrible. You know, and I gave many, many, there's so many examples I can give of cultural issues of behavior that we may look at and say, if you've traveled anywhere around the world, you probably have a lot of examples yourself of things that you've seen. And, well, gosh, you travel right around the United States and say things that you've seen that are just, wow. I mean, how can people do that? What is that all about? I mean, look at our own, look at our culture, our Western culture in America, that we use drugs, substances that supposedly make us feel happy. One in particular, alcohol. You know, having a drink is very much part of our culture. Here in the Western culture, having a drink to calm ourselves down because we feel better when we pull in these outside resources. Wow. Unreal. What do you use to make you feel better, to move you away from feeling uncomfortable? We've got some callers online, and I'm going to take you in just a moment. Thank you for hanging in there on the switchboard with us. Be patient with me for just a moment as I explain something about mental illness, because I want you to come back at me and give me some of your stuff. Give me some of your stories. Share your comments, your ideas. Hopefully there's some teachers on this switchboard. Of course there's teachers on the switchboard because we're all teachers, right? Okay. You know, the rate of individuals diagnosed with mental illness has risen, and it's not surprising that teachers are within this population. Just the other day I was mentioning the show, Teachers with Mental Illness, and someone said, teachers with mental illness? I never think about teachers with mental illness. Well, if you think, what is mental illness? I mean, mental illness can be anything from depression, anxiety, to schizophrenia. I mean, there's a large range of mental health, so-called disorders, meaning that the order of something is out of order, okay? So why wouldn't teachers be within this population? They're not perfect. Sources reveal that teachers are dealing with depression, anxiety, and other stress-related disorders, And we entrust our success to them. We entrust the success of our children to them. Can we trust the teacher with a mental disability? If we just take a few minutes, as we're going to do today, to understand that mental and emotional disabilities do not indicate incompetence about a subject. There's so much to learn with this. Let's take in our callers for this morning. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. How are you? Good morning. 973. How are you? Okay, if you wish to remain silent. Go ahead.
I called someone to listen to the show, so I'm hoping that they're listening.
Wonderful, wonderful. And state your name, sir.
Habibullah Salim.
Habibullah Salim, and you are one of our educational consultants, and we always appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning as we address this very sensitive subject. Let me get the other caller online. It's an 815 number. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Yes, that's the young lady. She's out of Rockford, Illinois.
Okay. 815, how are you?
Fine. Thank you.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you now. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm
You're
so
calling from, where are you at now? What state?
Rockford, Illinois.
Rockford, Illinois. What's the weather like there?
It's about 35 or so. It's not bad. Sunny. Kind of
sunny out
but
there.
It's nice. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's great. Are you a teacher yourself?
No, I'm not.
Oh, I bet you are, though. Do you share information with others?
Yes.
Well, then you are a teacher.
Yeah,
congratulations.
I just shared this show with someone else also. I call
there you go.
Else. Yeah.
There you go. And hopefully they're listening to the show. A lot of, you know, who comes on the switchboard are those that call in, but there are a lot of people that listen to the show, and also they also listen to the archive show. So sometimes if they can't get it right when it's on broadcast, they listen to it later. So you can always go back in and share the show with others. This morning, may I have your name?
Christine Rashida Salim.
Christine?
Yes.
Oh, Christine, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I hope you're going to enjoy learning a little bit about mental illness. One of the things that I wanted to bring out about mental illness is that there's a lot of myths that are going on. One of them is that, you know, can we trust a teacher who is diagnosed with mental illness to teach? Can we trust her or him in the classroom? Why not? Why can't we? Do we all deal with some form of mental illness, like depression, anxiety, alcoholism, substance abuse? What do you think?
Yes, I do think we all deal with some type of problem, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. And you know, it goes in all types of arenas, all types of arenas. People feel bad one day, and the next day they feel better, okay? But there are some that, unfortunately, because of chemical imbalances in the brain, that are no different than what happens when you break a leg. Sometimes you break the neurons in your brain, or they break for whatever reason. And so when they do that, we need something that will help us bridge them back together again so we can think clearly. So it's not about the factor that someone even that goes out and says, well, I just want to be depressed or I want to feel bad. Sometimes we really don't have any control over how the neurons, the cells in our brain, actually interact with each other. Brother Habib, do you have something to say on that?
You're speaking to me, Habibullah?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have been talking with Rashida earlier. And we were talking about the inner self and the outer self as it relates to, I'm now addressing it and relating it to mental, the mental.
Yes.
And I found that if we only focus on, and you mentioned quite a few things, drugs and substances, all the different things. It could be tattoos on our body, but all of these are things on the outside. And so the inner self is where we have to place greater focus.
Yes.
And that inner self, it takes us to the mental. When the mental is not functioning right, properly, we have a word called lament, L-A-M-E-N-T, lament. And those letters are in the word mental, L-A-M-E-N-T, lament. And it says lament means to express sorrow, to mourn, to regret strongly, a crying out in grief, or complaining. So I thought about how much we need to cleanse ourselves from the inside in order to have the kind of mindset that is necessary for us to be productive. And I shared with Rashida, focusing on the outer. The word outer, it has in it rut, R-U-T. Those letters are there. Also, the word outer has rot, R-O-T. It also has T-R-U-E, true. So it says if we're not being true to our inner self, the outer will cause us to get in a rut and then rot.
Yes.
Okay? We rot. So the key word is called inner cleansing. Cleansing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that word cleansing is spelled C-L-E-A-N, and then it says S-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
S-I-N-G. In other words, cleansing helps to have that smile you talked about earlier.
Yes.
Waking up with a smile. And that's why as soon as we get up, we need to go and wash up, you know, cleanse.
Yes.
And then
yes,
we feel water. So it's talking about a bath, bathing our inner self, taking a bath. And to bath, a bath word means to apply water.
Mm-hmm.
To apply water. And water is a liquid that descends from the clouds. And I see clouds as being that mental problem, that mental grief, that mental regret. Water is a liquid that descends from the clouds. And it says a major constituent to all living matter. So how do we apply that water inside? How do we get water inside and bathe ourselves and cleanse ourselves?
Yes.
And it takes us to the essence of prayer.
Yes, very important.
Yeah, prayer. And I wanted to say two more words, and I want to let you go back. But prayer, as I said, it has in it P-A-Y, the word pray. P-A-Y, pay. Pay is the mercy of our Creator. He gives us His mercy. And the word ray, R-A-Y, is guidance of our Creator. So we pray for mercy, and we pray for guidance, which takes us to the cleansing and takes us to our inner self. It says in her.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah, in her, it says in her, and in the woman, because she's the feeder of all the babies that come into this world. She feeds them first. And so that cleansing has to be correct food, correct thought, correct education, correct love, everything correct. And it's easy to be incorrect without even knowing that we're incorrect.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's very, very, it falls into what our topic is today as far as teachers with mental illness. When we talk about the cleansing, crying is also another way when we pray and we cry that we are cleansing our body. And so one of the things that I would like to bring out in addition to what you said is that we need to encourage our teachers out there to really get in touch with their inner self. I love that. In touch with their inner self so that they can start the cleansing process. So not only will they be more productive in the classroom, but also be in a position where they can become role models and teach others how to do it, because you can't teach another person something unless you believe that that is the right way. I mean, that's the great teacher is one who has not only the experience and not necessarily the direct experience, could be an indirect experience with what they are sharing, the knowledge that they are sharing. So we really encourage teachers to look inside of themselves and to allow themselves to start this cleansing process. So thank you so much for bringing that in. We have another caller online. We want to take that caller. Good morning. This is 901 area. This is Professor Applewhite. Good morning. Good morning. Are you there? If you wish to remain silent, it's okay. We appreciate you calling in this morning. Anytime that you want to break into the conversation and just give me a little hello there and you've got something to say, it's fine. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I want to start with going through a few of the myths that are out there about mental illness, and I want to try to explain. I think I opened up by talking about this difference between abnormal versus normal behavior. And, you know, with that throwing around that word crazy, okay, we got to be real careful throwing around that word crazy, because that can really upset a lot of people when you tell them that you're acting crazy, especially if they already feel that there's some abnormality in the way that they're acting. Teachers are regarded as, on the hierarchy, they're regarded highly. Students look up to teachers. Let's just say it. That's the way it is. Okay? Why? Because you are the leader. We walk into the classrooms and you stand there and you are in front of the classroom or around the classroom, and we look up to you as the leader, as the guiding force in that classroom. Okay? So no matter what your personal circumstances are in your life, and you do have them, I mean, teachers get divorces, teachers lose houses, teachers land up homeless, teachers land up unemployed, teachers land up with death and illness in their families and within their own lives, illness that they have to deal with. I was just speaking recently with a teacher who's dealing with cancer and still going into that classroom and doing the best she can every day and dealing with the after effects of chemotherapy. There are so many different things that are going on, and don't tell me for a moment that you would think that this beautiful, wonderful woman who has been teaching for over 15 years doesn't have some emotional upheaval or disheaval in what she's doing every day, trying to function as normally as she can in the classroom when she's dealing with all the personal issues of trying to deal with cancer or so many other things that may be going on with other teachers. Teachers drink. Teachers take drugs, just like all of us do. What kinds of drugs? Prescribed and some non-prescribed. Why do they do it? Just the same reason why we all do. Many of us. We drink coffee to feel better in the morning. That's a drug, by the way. That's caffeine. So I can start with the basic elements of what we use to feel better in our lives. Why do we want to feel better? Because somewhere along the line we don't feel good. So we take something to feel good. But what is it that makes, that draws this very fine line between normal versus abnormal behavior? And what are the myths that are out there about it so that we can understand more how we can help teachers, anyone in our lives with mental illness? They say people with psychological disorders act in really crazy, bizarre ways. Well, you know what? This is research and this is fact. Most people who have mental health disorders, you do not see them acting in bizarre ways. Believe it or not, they look just fine, my friends. They walk, talk, and blend in very, very well in our society and within our schools. Obviously, in the fact that we have teachers that are doing some very, very awful things with students. Not just the stuff that you and I may have grown up with, Habibullah. Okay?
Yes.
With with the teacher that doesn't give the appropriate grade, is not fair, or tears down the student. We're talking about teachers. Gosh, I mean, the research is out there. They're having sex with students. Okay? They're turning students, they're looking at the vulnerability of students and tearing them down in all kinds of ways. But I grant you, that's only a small portion. Just like it's just a small portion, a very small portion of people that actually exhibit bizarre or so-called crazy behavior. Your so-called mentally ill person, if that's, you know, and I really am careful, I tread gently with that word, okay, is not someone who you can tell right away that they have some type of abnormality. So I want you to really think about that for a minute, my friends, and come to an understanding that as a mental health professional myself, and some of you out there listening to the show may agree with me, that just because someone doesn't exhibit that behavior doesn't mean that they don't have issues. It just means they're very, very good, as most of us are, at hiding behind what's really bothering us. And when we're in a classroom, and especially with the overcrowded classrooms of today, especially with administration, we're going to touch on educational administrators for a minute, that may not be very supportive to teacher education and development. Are we going to talk about the society we live in, the communities that we live in, that do not reinforce that we need to take care of our teachers? We need to listen to them, too, that they have issues that are going on in their lives that may cause them to act sometimes out of the norm. Another myth about mental illness is that it's a sign of a weakness. It's a sign of weakness? Now, I talked a little bit before about the factor that when your brain is not operating correctly, just like when you break a leg or an arm or you get a cold, the cells in your brain do not interact with each other appropriately. They don't go down, you know, you're going down a freeway, you're going down a highway, stay in your lane and everything runs smoothly. Stay at the right speed and everything's fine. Once there's a breakage in that, we land up all over the road and accidents happen. Well, it's the same thing with the neurons in our brain, the cells in our brain. They're, when we're born, they may be going in a great direction, straight on. And then something happens to interrupt the flow. It could be the food we eat. It could be the lack of cleansing, which Abibala brought out a moment ago. It could be not acknowledging that we have an inner self that needs to be looked at. It could be that we have all kinds of environmental issues going on in our life. It could be divorce or a bad relationship or a child that's sick. Teachers experience everything that we experience, all of us, in our lives. Let's not forget that. So why is it so, uncomfortable for us to talk about helping teachers with mental illness? Why is that so surprising that teachers are in that population, and why do we assign that myth to them that they could be dealing with weakness? Psychological disorders are just like any other disorder. If we're dealing with it head on and we see that it is a sign of, if we interpret it as a sign of weakness, just like we do with, if we do that with anything, then it will be weakness. It will be interpreted that way. Let's look at it as a sign of strength when we see a teacher that's still in that classroom and dealing with all the things that she's dealing with in her own personal life, when is the last time that any of us really asked a teacher, how are you? And really meant that. You know, because in our society, we say, how are you, as a cliche. You know, in our Western society, I remember speaking with a man who follows the Dalai Lama a lot, and he said, you know, the Dalai Lama says he's very, it's uncomfortable for him because when people ask him in the Western culture how he's doing, they really don't mean that. They expect him to just say, fine. You know, the cliche of how you're doing and then the cliche back, fine, and then that's it. But the reality is that when you say, how are you really asking, how are you? And when is the last time that you asked a teacher that? If you have children, yourself. If you're in college, yourself. No matter what age you are. When's the last time you asked your professor, how are you? And really meant it. Like you really care. You might be surprised. So there is no personal weakness in a mental health disorder. It just means that somewhere along the line, the journey of life, that things get a little bit off course. I congratulate those teachers who are able to acknowledge that when they do get off course, that they are able to get back on it again. I acknowledge you and encourage you to find the resources to continually strengthen yourself. I have another myth, and this is a big one, that mentally ill people are often dangerous, dangerous, and you can't predict what they're going to do. Okay, that really, really, truly is not true. Only a few disorders, such as a really heavy psychosis and antisocial personalities, are you going to find that? And normally they would not be in the classroom. What we're talking about more than anything today are teachers that are dealing with depression and anxiety and substance abuse issues and even physical issues that may impact their mental health. Okay? So, unfortunately, we have these stereotypes out there of people who are mentally ill, and the stereotypes say that they're dangerous and they're stalkers and they're, but that's really not true, my friends. If you really want to get into the research, feel free to call me at White Apple Institute and we can talk a little bit more, especially if you have more concern about this particular subject. White Apple Institute is at 480-471-8082. Another myth, and I'm almost finished here. There's five that I wanted to cover today, and then I'm going to come back to the switchboard because we've got some great people that are on there that want to say some things, I'm sure. How about a person who's mentally ill never really recovers? How about that one? You know, once they're crazy, they're crazy. Wow, I've heard that before. What therapy? And I believe in therapy. Of course I do. As a psychologist, I have to believe in therapy or I would be in the wrong field. But there are a lot of people that are against it. Okay, that's because there are some mental health professionals that, unfortunately, they need some mental health support too. So, you know, if you run into a therapist or a counselor out there that hasn't treated you correctly and you sought that help, don't give up. There are people out there that can truly help you get over that hump, that moment, those moments of depression, those moments of feeling so anxious. How about the obsessive compulsive teacher? You probably run into that a lot. I'm hoping to hear some stories here as I open up the switchboard in just a moment of teachers who have exhibited some compulsive behaviors in the classroom. Like making a student sit straight, don't move, sit in that European-style way and listen to what I'm saying and don't move. And make sure that everything is neat. And if it's not neat, then I'm going to grade you. And being so emphatic, or degrade you, I should say, I'm going to degrade you. Get that one. The last one, the last myth, is that teachers who have mental illness can't work. Stop it, stop it, stop it. Of course they can work, just like you do. Just like most people do who are dealing with any form of mental illness. We study psychological disorders and we know that disorder simply means we put it back in order again. And so that's what we strive to do. Let's take some callers in here. Let's say good morning to a few people. Good morning, 480-200. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? That sounds like Maria.
Yes.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. As one of our very loyal listeners, a student of White Apple Institute, we thank you so much for joining us this morning. Anything you have to say on teachers with mental illness? Just kind of listening this morning?
Yeah.
All right. That sounds great. We have another caller online. Stay with us, Maria. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite, and this looks like a Phoenix number. We have a lot of different area codes up here this morning. I know we have a lady that called in from Rockford, Illinois. I didn't forget you. Christine, I'm going to come back to you and see if you have anything to say, because I know I bombarded you with a lot of information this morning. Good morning, 602. 418. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back. How is everyone?
Good morning, Dr. Beverly Polnitz. How are you?
Good morning.
Doing wonderful. Just wonderful. Enjoying your show as usual. Pretty much a listener. I've been trying to think back to some of my teachers that I've had, and I'm extremely fortunate. I have had those instructors, one who would take, and if you didn't write with your, you know, with your right hand,
mm-hmm.
as she says, then she would take a ruler and beat your hand.
Wow.
And I remember she tried to beat my hand one day, and I just refused. I'm not giving you my hand, period. I was just a little girl. I was like, no, I'm not going to stick my hand out there for you to hit it. So,
wow.
Of course, I got sent home, but that was okay.
Wow. Talk about cultural implications there. You know, all the things that we hear about people who write with their left hand. That you know, of course, it starts with the acknowledgement in school, and very, very aggravating. You know, that can be a real a hurtful thing for a young girl. I'm glad you were able to overcome that.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, my mother was left-handed. My brother was left-handed, and I wasn't left-handed. I literally wrote with both hands.
Uh-huh.
But I still wasn't going to let her beat one of them.
Yes. We call that ambidextrous, and that's great that you can write with left and right hands. But, you know, there was a time in our society that anyone that did that was regarded as someone who was abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and isn't that something, you know, depends not only just the culture that you were in, but the time in history also.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a big point, the time in history. Anyone else have anything they want to add? Because we're coming close to about 11 minutes left on the show, and I'd like to get some comments on other experiences that people have had with teachers.
I'm going to close out with a poem later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So whenever you want me to do it, then I'll do it. It's not too
okay.
short.
As we come to a close, I will come back to you, Habiba Al-Salim. Thank you so
okay.
much. Christina, you're enjoying the show this morning. Do you have anything to say about any teachers that you've known in your life that exhibit what we call that abnormal type of behavior, or something that you'd like to ask?
Did you say Christine?
Yes.
Oh, right now, I don't have any. It's a whole bunch of things that's going on in my mind, but because this is the first time I've been on the show,
Yes.
And I'm enjoying it. And I wanted to ask a question about, you say you could access the archives?
Yes. Yes. You can listen to any of the shows that have gone on, like the last few weeks. We did a series on Why Are Students So Angry? And there's a lot of things that came out with that particular show about why there's so much anger in our schools. But remember, I mean, it goes, we've been on air since 2009, so there's a lot of shows in there that you may find that truly interest you. If you're dealing with anybody in your family that's unemployed or underemployed, there's a whole series of discussions that we did on that. So feel free to look through the archive shows and just click the button, and you can listen to it just like you were sitting there listening to the show today.
How would I, is the same number that I dialed in on to get that?
Actually, you go into the computer, into the internet, and pull up blogtalkradio.com.
Okay.
Okay, and then the / student to teacher.
Okay.
Okay, and actually, yeah. If you just put in, student and the number 2 teacher, it should bring it up in Google. Or you can actually, if you put in Professor Applewhite, you can actually find the show in Google. So there's lots of ways to access into the show and get this very valuable information that people share with us. We have a lot of guest speakers that come onto the show and share things with us, and we appreciate them whenever they come in. One of the things that I want to bring out before we start closing it, I think that's real important, is how do we, you know, we talked about normal to abnormal behavior and, you know, what that thin line is. Well, let me share with you, as a psychologist and counselor, what we're talking about when we look at that fine line. It's usually two things. It's usually the frequency of the behavior that you're seeing or that a person is experiencing. The frequency. How many times do they exhibit a certain behavior? Okay? And we do this, we kind of like make up a timeline when we're listening to somebody talking. I do a lot of online counseling, so people, when they call in or on the telephone, they're telling me about what symptoms that they have. And so my job is to figure out if the frequency of how many times you're feeling a sense of depression, how many times does that happen? If you're feeling anxiety, how many times do your palms sweat and you feel tense and headaches coming on? So I look at the frequency of what's going on. So that's one thing that tells us whether or not it truly is, we're truly heading in the direction of being of a diagnosis of a mental health disorder, okay? And also there's frequency and then the duration of it. How long does it last? You know, I'm sure that all of us can say, you know, we've had depressive moments. Just any teacher can say, well, I was depressed. If you're going through a divorce, you're depressed. If you're having if you're pregnant, okay, you can get depressed. Okay, but these are temporary things that happen in our lives. When we're determining normal versus abnormal behavior, what we're looking for is, again, the frequency of the behavior and how long does it last. So if we're dealing with someone who is just upset and depressed because they just broke up with their boyfriend, I encourage doctors, and I have many friends out there that are MDs, not to automatically prescribe a drug, an antidepressant, because we're talking about a temporary situation that will eventually, time will heal. But we find that, unfortunately, even in our school system with middle school students, when they, and I don't mean to use just one drug name out there, but, you know, I mean, I'm just using a cliche that's out there called the Prozac Nation. And we are called many times, we're that assigned that name, the Prozac Nation. And that means that there's a lot of students and teachers that are on antidepressant drugs. And once you start that routine, now some of us do need that now. Again, back to what I just described as determining what is abnormal behavior. It's that frequency and it's the duration. How long does it stay? If they're not in, if we can't determine that it's truly a mental health disorder, we need to stay away from inducing any type of drug. We want to encourage people to, just like Habibullah was bringing out earlier in the show, I do a lot of that inner work, reflection stuff, looking at our lives. The book Nazim Rashid writes, it's on the market now at Amazon, Reconnected, talks a lot about how to reconnect with a different type of reality, to create a different type of reality, to pull yourself out of depression and anxiety. And by the way, he'll be on our show on the 18th with one of our well-known counselors in the Phoenix area. They'll be doing the last part of this series with me on teachers with mental illness. And so it's real important. Let's just recap here. We talked a lot about the cultural issues that that are there when we're looking at so-called abnormal behavior. I gave you some examples of the factor that in different cultures and different societies, things are looked at differently as far as what is abnormal. So you have to look at the society, the community that a person lives in. I also talked about the myths of mental illness. And I hopefully that I've helped you to understand a little bit more about how a teacher can still be effective in the classroom, even though she or he may be dealing with depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive behaviors, or any of the other mental health disorders that are in our what we call the Bible of psychology or psychiatry, which is the DSM. Many of you may have heard of that book. And that's the book that actually defines all of the so-called mental health disorders that are prevalent in our particular Western society. And then, of course, I talked about the difference of knowing the difference between normal versus abnormal behavior. And we got a few examples in there. And we thank Dr. Polnitz for sharing that example. Anything else you wanted to share, Dr. Polnitz? Because we have a couple of minutes left and we want to get Habibullah's poem in here.
No, that's it. Please, let's hear the poem. I'm excited about hearing the poem.
Okay, all right. Habibullah, take it away.
Yes, I'm ready. No longer mentally ill, replacing neglect with righteous will. Teach with vigor, teach with love. Love the inner to rise above. Love the inner, nourish it well. Love the inner, commit to excel. Cleansing daily to purify. Tears are wonderful, tears in the eye. Focusing on the positives of life. Moral balance, amazing advice. Love the inner beyond just things. Love the inner to joyfully sing. Remaining plentiful within the norm, stay in your lane, blow your horn. Hurdle the obstacles, corrosion or rust. Love the inner with maximum trust. Thinking healthy, dismissing doubt. Love the inner in order to shout. Obedience to self, the self that's blessed. The Creator's message is the test. Hear and do as He has said. Love the inner, avoid being dead. Dead in the mind, a terrible thing. Love the inner, and joyfully sing.
Wow. Thank you so much. Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that. What a wonderful way to close our show, and also to ask all of you to ask someone, especially a teacher, how are you this week? Okay?
Yes.
And trust the fact that mental disorder just means that we need to put things back in order again. We thank you so much. This is Professor Applewhite signing off. on the Student to Teacher Show. We'll talk again next week. And thank all of you, for those of you that have joined on the chat. And we'll close with some great music by Nazim Rashid again. God bless you. And love. Boy, that reminds me of Don Cornelius. We missed, we lost this week, I think. The poetry. Poetry.